So the talk for this morning, I'd just like to start with a gatha from the Buddha. This very traditional way to do it in Buddhist countries, they do this. Garavo chani vato cha santu ti cha katan yuta kalena dhamma savanang etang mangalamuttamang. So, and of course, this is the quiz part of the morning. What was that gatha from? I think the traditional Buddhists know, you should all know actually, because I recited this gatha about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. Yes, yes. This is where you think, is this the only one he knows? So, and what it means is, that they're very nice actually, the meaning of it is reverence or respect and humility, contentment and gratitude, timely listening to the Dhamma. This is the highest blessing. All of these ones are the highest blessing. So today it is going to be gratitude. I'm going to speak about gratitude. There is reverence, respect, humility, contentment, gratitude. And I talk about all of these things actually because these are wholesome emotions that are very useful for us to develop for our happiness and well-being, for our happiness and well-being. It's also good karma. So just briefly to mention what gratitude is, because I'll talk about it a little later, and it's thanks for what we've received. And this, of course, is what we've received from other people, you know, our parents, friends, family, or anyone, but also what we've received from life, and to a large extent what we've received from our past karma, you know, is part of that that inheritance that we have. And the Pali word, as you might have, I think the Buddhist, traditional Buddhists would know, katanyuta, that's the Pali word for gratitude. Or gratitude is a bit, the volume's going up. The gratitude is a bit of an abstract term. I like the expression of gratitude, the emotional content of gratitude is thank you from the heart. Thank you from the heart. It's thankfulness. And this is the part of the meaning of it, of katanyuta. Often they say in the Pali, katanyu katavedi. And katanyu is knowing what's been done. And then a katavedi is experiencing what has been done, with, in this case, with gratitude. So it's someone who knows or acknowledges what has been done and feels thankful or grateful for what has been done. So this is what it is. I don't think doesn't know what gratitude is. Most people know what gratitude is. It's a very common human emotion. It's not only Buddhists. Everyone has it, actually. And it also has a sense of appreciation and often a feeling of being blessed or lucky. So when I do a guided meditation, I'll do a bit of meditation during this talk too, because I know many of you cannot come to the Tuesday night when I do the meditation, guided meditations. One of the meditations, I'll do a little bit of it this morning, is using words to bring up a feeling. And what works for me in bringing up gratitude is, I'm so lucky, I'm so lucky. And it's very interesting when you hear that, what your response is to it. There's no correct response, just to be interested in how you respond when you hear, I'm so lucky. So this is an expression, for me at least, of gratitude and how we can bring it up. Find the right words for yourself, actually. And the Buddha said, a quote from the Buddha, always like to, wait a minute. Monks, there are two persons that are hard to find in the world. What two? The one who is first to do a favour, pubakari, and he or she who is grateful for what is done. These are the two persons hard to find in the world. It's true now. It was true in the Buddha's time. It's true now. So things haven't changed that much. So today will be a bit more interactive, I think. We'll have So this first, to begin with, I'll start. This is an experiment that I like to do with gratitude. So I'd like everyone to just close their eyes for a moment and just to bring to mind, think of three things which you are currently thankful for or grateful for. Three things. And now think of three things that could be better or be improved on. So now, just this is the test. Now you can open your eyes. I just ask you, this is the test. You answer for yourself, actually. What was harder, to think of things that which you were grateful for or things that could be better? Any replies, any responses? So was it easier to bring up to your mind things that you are currently thankful for or grateful? Or was it easier to bring up those things that you need to improve, change, make better? Any responses? Yes? That's it, yes, Claire. Yes. Exactly. That's where our minds are at, actually. We're working on the to-do list, aren't we? We've got, I must do this, da da da. But the things that are there already, that have been achieved, that we can be grateful for, thankful for, they don't come so easily because they're not on the to-do list. They're on the done list. So they don't come to mind. So this is points to the nature of our minds, you know, and the way we've been trained. And the training is, of course, you know, in critical thinking. That's what I often mention. It's a very useful thing to be trained in. And our educational system encourages critical thinking. And critical thinking sees what's missing, what need could be improved on, how we could, improve on whatever it is we are doing. Someone was actually talking to me about the other day about critiquing in academic studies, whether it's architecture or art. I think this person was in architecture. They have these critiques, and that's really tough for them, you know, really tough. But this is the sorts of mind states that we're encouraging through education. And of course, that has its uses. And this is where we see all the great developments in science, in physical environment, and so on. But if we cannot turn it off when it comes to ourselves, we can't. And we start critiquing ourselves. We put ourselves on the spot and give ourselves a hard time and forget all the things that are there already that we can be very thankful about. So this is something that's part and parcel of our educational system and life. But we can, as it were, bring balance to our lives by thinking of the things we already have. And this is gratitude, for sure, and contentment. And these, Ajahn Brahm says, a quote Ajahn Brahm, he says, contentment and gratitude is part of that, really, is the fast track to enlightenment. So that's a very, very, very powerful thing, actually, contentment and gratitude. If we're grateful, it usually leads to a sense of contentment. You know, they sort of relate to each other quite well. Because if we're grateful to people, grateful to life, then we feel content with what we have. We're focusing on what's there rather than what's not there, which is critical thinking. What could be better, what we need to be happy. So, and this gratitude fits in with the very powerful aspects of our lives, which we take for granted. It's giving and receiving. Giving is really, you know, in Buddhism, is a Buddhist teaching, dana, is charged with spiritual significance and useful for developing wholesome states of mind. And so is receiving. And receiving, gratitude is part of receiving, being thankful. We can't always be grateful for what we received. Sometimes that's quite a tall order. So they're powerful acts and they can give a rise to it. We're not always good at receiving. We're not always good at receiving. Sometimes people feel, and you see this actually, I see it myself, you know, embarrassed or awkward about it. And sometimes people can feel unworthy. And this can be very true for monastics, you know, monks and nuns, because we rely on what people give us. And, that can give rise to a feeling of, are we really worthy? And of course, we strive to be worthy of that. But some monks and nuns may feel like, I'm not worthy, and then they suffer, they really suffer. So this is aspect of receiving. Also, the problem we often have with receiving is we focus on the gift, don't we? We think it's the wrong colour, it's the wrong model, or it's not what I wanted, you know, this sort of thing, isn't it? rather than where the person's coming from who's giving it, you know. So this is a very important part of it. Just in relation to giving, though, this is not quite the subject of this talk, but a quotation I like a lot from this motivational speaker. He's a Hare Krishna, a monk, I think, a monk actually, Gaur Gopal Das. And he says, when people come to temples and churches, and I say even Buddhist temples, it's the same, they're always asking for something from God or the gods. We have the devas, and this idea in Buddhism of the devas are not supreme beings. And they go there and ask for favours, you know. In Sri Lanka you see it a lot. There's devalayas, these places where they have little shrines to the gods. And you go in there and you ask, oh, I want to pass my exam, I want to... You know, if I get over cancer, I'll come and I'll make an offering and all these sorts of things. People do this at churches too, same idea. And he goes on to say, he says, they ask, or they're demanding, give me what I want, give me what I want. But he says, but few people go to the churches or the temples, be it Buddhist or Christian or whatever, and say, think, what can I give? What can I give to God? What can I give just generally? So that is a whole different way of looking at giving. That turns giving into something powerful, actually. And when we're always asking for something, you know, wanting, demanding, then we become paupers, actually. We're impoverishing ourselves. So it's very, very important. This giving is very important, but how we receive is also very important. And the theme, I was going to call this talk, because on the internet there are very clever names for attitude, about gratitude, the attitude of gratitude is one of them. Gratitude is an attitude, so I thought I've got to come up with something different. The pressure's on. So I came up with gratitude is not a platitude. Do you know what a platitude is? It can actually be a platitude, you know. We all say these things, you know. You know, like you can say things like, one I thought of was, there's always light at the end of the tunnel, something like that. The things that are actually true, but because people say them, and they're saying them not necessarily coming from that place, they're fairly empty and hollow and overused. This is the point of a platitude, overused. So that's why I thought, call this talk, gratitude is not a platitude. Hopefully not, so... So I'm just going to just mention a little bit about, now that you've been through the exam, what gratitude is. The purpose of developing gratitude, contentment, or any of the wholesome states of mind is, of course, that it fuels our practice and it overcomes our negative states of mind. So when you develop a gratitude, contentment, loving kindness, compassion, joy for others' success and their good qualities and equanimity, these sorts of emotions, respect, humility. When we develop these, not only is it a very pleasant experience for us, it brings happiness. These bring happiness, actually, to the mind. But what they instantly do, like lighting a candle in the dark, they remove or reduce the negative qualities. They go down. So this is very, very useful. And this is the whole of spiritual practice, be it Buddhist or Christian, any religion, is developing the wholesome, making the positive and reducing the negative. And it's very important too to think to be aware that gratitude is an emotion. Too often, I was saying this on Friday night because I gave a talk on gratitude at the Melbourne Uni Buddhist Society. So I was saying too often in the West, people know, and even in Sri Lanka it's the case too, that a lot of people who know the Dhamma very intellectually, they know the Noble Eightfold Path and the three characteristics of existence and the Four Noble Truths. And they know all this, but they're not in contact with the emotions that drive the path, that make the path come alive, that make it a practice that transforms us. And that is on the emotional level. And of course, this comes from the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, Sammasankappa. This is called right attitude, right attitude, or right thought, it's sometimes called. Ajahn Brahm calls it right motivation. This is where we're coming from. And that is coming from the emphasis in that aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path is giving. And then loving kindness or friendliness, we can call it, and compassion, kindness, caring for others. This is where how we practice the path, as it were. It's all very well if we know the theory, and often, but we don't come from these places. If we don't come from kindness when we're practicing, say, meditation, we force the mind, the results won't be good, and they won't lead to the goal of the Noble Eightfold Path, to enlightenment. And we won't enjoy it either. That's a biggie. So, gratitude is, of course, appreciation, thankful. A nice one, it's a very English saying, actually. You can, very old-fashioned saying, count your blessings, or count our blessings, isn't it? That's a very old-fashioned saying, but it's very true. People don't think about that these days, because, as I say, the to-do list is much bigger. To-do list, what we need, what we want. So, and it's an antidote, of course, for fault finding, for that negative state of the mind. When we're grateful, we're in a different mode from the to-do list. We're in the mode of appreciating what we have and who's given it to us. So this is a totally different, and it's like we're not taking people or situations in our lives or things for granted. Because this is the usual mode people we operate from, especially if, you know, you live day in, day out with people, you know, your wife, your family, your work colleagues, whoever it is, in a monastery, other monks or nuns, depending on the monastery, you can take each other for granted. And this is one of the, enemies, perhaps you could say, of gratitude. You know, taking each other for granted. So there's a nice Nasruddin story, which I haven't told before, this one, so it's good. And this was, Nasruddin is this Sufi holy man who, is supposed to have lived in Turkey in, say, the 10th century, I think, around there, 10th. It's on the internet anyway, everything is. Wikipedia, of course. So, Nasruddin was walking along a road and you can imagine seeing them off at the airport. And you don't know, we don't know, if they will return safely. We never know. Or that these people may have moved to another country or state. Or the ultimate separation, they may have died. Or we may have got a job in another country. Just to get in contact with how that feels when we bring to mind our partners, our children, our friends, and our parents. And so now we can just come out of that brief meditation. And again, another exam. When will this monk stop asking questions? So, this is just a test. Did you feel more appreciation, thankfulness, gratitude for the people that you brought to mind? Did you? Yeah. Not getting much response, but I see people at airports. You've seen them too. Some people get really emotional at airports when they're saying goodbye to people. Because the truth is, actually, we don't know that we'll see them again. I mean, we may walk out the terminal door and get run over by a taxi or a bus. That's possible. The plane might crash. That's another possibility, of course. So this is a very good good way to get in contact with what? What does this bring up? It's the same with what Nasruddin was teaching, actually. It's an emotion, but it points to a basic... a quality of reality, you know, I call it the fly in the ointment, as it were. And that is impermanence, isn't it? Nothing lasts. That's what I like, nothing lasts. That things are transient, they're moving all the time. This body and the mind, and the bodies and minds of everyone here, our children, our parents, everyone's moving, they cannot last. And there's no certainty there. We cannot be certain when we go out the airport door that we'll ever see the person we saw off on the plane just a few minutes ago. As I said, it may be us, it may be them. Who knows? So it's all not certain. And this is what if we really take on board, you know, the Buddha's teaching on anicca, impermanence, transience, or inconstancy is another word for it, then we can really appreciate the people in our lives and the things in our lives too, much, much more. And I often have given this teaching before, but because it's such a good one, you can't go past it really. Ajahn Chah, famous meditation teacher from Northeast Thailand, he passed away in 1992, but a great teacher, has many, many thousands of students, even to this day in many branches. He'd hold up a cup and say, "The cup's already broken." And people would think, "What is he talking about? It's fine." But what do you, and then he'd go on to explain that one day, even though the cup is fine now, he would say, this is Northeast Thailand, one day a chicken will knock it over. And he said, then you'll hate that chicken, or your child will knock it over and you'll hate that child, or whatever. And he said, but if you know that this is, one day it will break, when it does break, you're not as upset. Then you can let go a little bit, you know, because you realise, yes, it was made, therefore it will break. So this is, and because we know that it's going to break, this is the point of it actually, we look after it as well as we can, but we know that one day it will break. And because of that, we can be less attached to it, you know, less attached to it. And when it does break, we won't be so destroyed, we won't be so upset. Whether that cup that breaks is our body, when we get sickness, when we get cancer, when we're about to die, or it's when our relationships break up, or when we lose the job, you know, lose our job, whatever it is that, you know, whatever it is that breaks, it came together, it will break. So this is a very important teaching that allows us to have more gratitude when we realise, yeah, we're not here forever, you know. And as I get older, I get more appreciation of transience, of impermanence, because it's less theoretical as you get older. You're getting closer to death, you get more problems with the body and so forth. So, you know, one has gratitude for what life has offered us. So, but that sounds quite heavy, but the main point on reflecting on, what is the point of reflecting on gratitude? Anybody know? Any ideas? Can't get it wrong.
Say goodbye to your relatives and they go away,
you're sad.
But I think there's also a feeling of love.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Even if they're not there, that love is still there.
Exactly. That is actually, that's what I say to people when, you know, they're grieving. It's always there. The love, the memory of that person is always there. And, you know, if they go overseas or if they die, they're the same in some ways, you know, they're not there, as it were. So what's the difference is just remember when a person dies, they're still in our hearts and still in our minds. And we still have that gratitude for them too. But the main purpose of reflecting on gratitude, or not only reflecting on it, practicing it really is the point, isn't it? Practicing it is for happiness for ourselves. And also it cleanses the mind, it cleans the mind. It reduces the negative aspects in the mind by, you know, developing this happiness with this gratitude, this thankfulness for what we have received rather than for what we think we have to get, we need, or we deserve, whatever it is that we don't have now. So now I thought we can do maybe just another brief meditation. And this is really to get in touch with the feeling of gratitude. This is what the other one was aimed at. You know, I can say a lot of words, give you a lot of definitions, of course, but those words, those definitions are not gratitude. They're just words. The feeling is what we're aiming at. And this is what we want to cultivate in our lives, this feeling of gratitude and thankfulness. And we will actually benefit so much from it, so much from it. So, again, so you're having a lot of meditation this morning. Probably thought, I didn't come for meditation. So now we can, this is how to develop gratitude. So we can close our eyes, if you'd please close your eyes and come into the present moment again. Just be aware of sitting, being present, being here with the sound of the air conditioners, my voice, the temperature. Now, I just ask you to reflect. What comes to mind when you hear the words, I'm so lucky, I'm so lucky? What comes to mind? Just the first responses. And then just reflect on things which make you feel, I'm so lucky. Maybe it's people, relationships, situations, health, whatever it is. And now, having come in contact or having brought up a feeling, hopefully experienced a feeling, we can combine this feeling with this sense of being present, being here and now, with whatever we're aware of, the sounds, this feeling, this warmth of thankfulness, I'm so lucky, just combining it with the experience of being present. I'm so lucky, sound of the air conditioner. I'm so lucky, feeling sitting on the chair or on the floor. And now we can slowly come out of the meditation, open our eyes and continue with the talk. So how did people find that? Did you find your, I'm so lucky? Did you feel that was a positive? If you hear that phrase, I'm so lucky, you think, wow, what about, work and the terrible situation I've got at work? Those, the boss, terrible, If you do that, that's worth noting too. You're just seeing what's going on in your mind. And that's good to note in the first, to begin with. See what comes up. It's an experiment. But then we always realise that to develop this sort of, positive emotions like I'm so lucky, to look for things then that one is, genuinely feels very fortunate to have in one's life, people, situations and things. And I would encourage people, this is just a little experiment for you, take it away, and there's no real test or no correct answer or anything like that.
Ajay.
Yes.
Regarding that, isn't it two-sided? To some people, when they say, I'm so lucky, then as what you pointed out, I'm so lucky, but I have cancer.
Yes. Yeah, now that comes up. That comes up.
How are you going to counter that? Oh, I'm so lucky. I'm so sick at the moment.
Yes.
Good. Or I'm so poor at the moment.
Good. Thank you for asking that, Adrian. That's a very good one, actually. So it's important. Hopefully there are other things in your life beside the cancer. It's true, when you think, I'm so lucky, the largest big issue in your life will come up. There's no doubt about that. And if it is cancer, of course it comes up. But that's not the thing you're particularly grateful about at that time. You're probably not grateful for having cancer. But there are other things. You might think, yeah, I've got cancer, but, oh, my family's fantastic. Like the monk who I share with next door, his mother passed away not last Thursday, the Thursday before, and his family were almost there 24/7. So she's dying. This is not a pleasant experience for anybody. but she's got the support 24/7, almost, not quite, of her family. And that must have made it so good for her to be able to, experience that love, that care, not being alone, as it were. So even if we have cancer, even if we are dying, there's always something that I'm so glad, I'm so lucky about. And also I'd say, you know, if people really, really go into looking at the difficult things in their lives, this was later in the talk actually, but it comes up now, is that sometimes we can be grateful for the real difficulties in our life, the tragedies in our life. They can turn out to be turning points for us, and our lives would not be what they were, what they have become without them. This sounds very theoretical, and then one can be grateful even for having cancer, even for any number of things, actually. And it reminds me of a very, very moving video I saw. This is a teacher in America. She's known as Byron Katie. Have you seen? Some people know Byron Katie. She's quite an interesting teacher, a very wonderful teacher, actually. And she was talking to a man that had cancer. He had a patch over his eye, and they didn't actually say what sort of cancer he had. And his, you know, he'd obviously pretty sick, and you know, he'd been through a lot. I don't know if he was recovering. And she, and one part of her technique is to ask four questions and the turnaround. And this turnaround is taking the opposite stance from what your original idea was. So his original idea is, having this cancer is the worst thing in my life. Fair enough. Most people would agree with that. But then she said to him, now the turnaround for that, what's the opposite? And he said, cancer is the best thing in my life. Wow. You know, it just knocks you off your seat when you hear that. You just, you know, even for you, or for myself, when I hear that, I think, wow, how can he say that? And you could see him taking, you know, a few deep breaths and think, why is this the case, you know? And then he said, you know, that it really brought him close to his family. He was a businessman. He was like an exec or a CEO type. And he said he never had much time for his family or anything, you know. And he said when he got the cancer, you know, his family were there for him, his wife, his children and other friends were there for him. And he really had quality time with them instead of thinking, you know, I've got to rush to the next meeting, got to get ready for the next board meeting or whatever it is that he was running with. And that was one of the things. And then she said, and? Expecting another thing, and he came up with a whole list of things. If you want to see that video clips on YouTube, Byron Katie, you know, it's one, I think, something to do with cancer, probably you find it. So this is true for all of us. If we really, you know, many of these things that are real tragedies, really difficult in our life, later when we reflect on them, they can have, a platitude is every cloud has a silver lining. That's a platitude, actually. But it's sometimes true, actually, that things that we take as the worst possible thing that could ever happen to us, when it happens, it actually turns into a blessing, and our lives would not have been the same. And maybe it's a bit of a digression, but I will mention it too now, is one of my favourite videos that I was sent, actually. Somebody sent me this from YouTube, of course, everything on YouTube. It's either Wikipedia or YouTube. This is Janine the Machine. Does any people here know Janine the Machine, that one? That's fantastic video on YouTube. She's an Aussie, even more interesting, Janine Shepherd. Janine Shepherd. And this is a presentation she gave at, looked like a seminar in 2016. She did a TED Talk too. The one I saw wasn't a TED Talk. And she relates her experience of, she was an athlete, she was 24, in 1988, she was going to the Olympics, that's her idea. She was in training and she was on this long bike ride and she'd been riding for 5.5 hours. When, just close to the end of the ride, she got hit by a truck, and everything went black. And she sustained 6 breaks in the back, in the spine. She had the spine was severed in 6 places. I think the spine, actually. And she had the skin peeled back, the skull exposed, the side open, gravel in there, everything. For 10 days, she hung on between life and death. And then just on the 10th day, she had this determination. This is the word for her, determination to come back into the body. And she did. And she said, miraculously, when she had this determination, instead of hovering between life and death, to come back to the body, the bleeding, internal bleeding stopped, which was massive, you know, as you can imagine, after you've been hit by a truck. And so she was back in this body, which was very painful and everything, and then she spent 6 months in the spinal unit recovering. She was in a full body cast. She was in a wheelchair, and the doctor said, at best, she had to use a catheter. And they said, this will be for life. She may get some feeling back in her feet, in a lower part of her body. And she did actually have some, still some movement that she could do, which is amazing. And then the nurse said to her, Janine, when you go home, this is the point of the name, you're going to get depressed. Everyone does. And she said, not me, I'm Janine the machine. And she said, I went home, I got depressed. She said, I was crying, my mum was crying, both crying. And she said, one day she went out onto the veranda in her wheelchair and full body cast. And she looked up into the sky, she was looking at the nature and everything. And then she saw this plane fly through the air. And then the thought, this is very human. I thought, this is just how human beings think. If I can't walk, I can fly. Maybe I can fly. And so she had this determination to learn to fly. Here she is in a full body cast, and in a wheelchair and everything. How, I mean, crazy, isn't it? But human beings are like that. And so she did. She went to the local Bankstown airport. It's a little airport for these smaller planes, I think. And she went there and she said she went to the counter and she saw these people. She was coming for her first flying lesson. And she said she could see them looking at it and think, oh, my God. She said they're out the back drawing the short straw. Who was going to take it for a ride, take it for the flight? And eventually she did. This person called Andrew took her for a flight. And she took off and, you know, they have dual control. So, you know, that wasn't, you know, she wasn't totally in charge of the plane. And so, and as they went towards the Blue Mountains where the accident happened, her instructor said, now it's your turn, Janine, take the controls and fly over the Blue Mountains. And she said, that's where my journey began. You can see it was very emotional when she remembered that. But she did, she flew. And then not only that, after that, she continued flying and she continued trying to walk. And she said, the turning point for her, she said, was she used to think, why me? This is a turning point for all of us, actually. She said, why me? What we all ask when a tragedy happens. And then it turned around to, why not me? And of course, that's the truth of life. Why not me? I'm experiencing it. And so she learnt to walk again. You know, she taught herself. She said, first of all, she could only raise her foot about an inch, you know, both feet, I think, one at a time. And then she said she could walk with two people, then one person. And then she could walk if she could hold on to the furniture, as long as it wasn't too far apart, she says. And then, so she was walking, being able to walk again. And she, not only did she continue her flying lessons, she got her private pilot's license, so she could fly around. Then she flew around Australia, I suppose solo, just on her own. And then she got a commercial pilot's license. And then she got her instructor's license. And so she was now teaching people in the same place that she came for lessons. It's amazing. And the first flight she took was just 12 months after she left, less than 12 months after she left the spinal ward. Fantastic. Amazing. And the very Buddhist thing she says at the end of it, this is part of her presentation, it's a good video if you'd like to see it, very moving. She says, and I realised that I'm Janine, I'm not the body, she said. And she says to the audience, and you, my friends, are not your bodies. We're the indomitable spirit, we're that determination. This is the word we use in Buddhism. We call it adhisthana or adhitana, determination. She has it amazingly. So here is a person who had this terrible accident, but in actual fact, if she hadn't had that accident, I don't know if Janine is grateful for it, I doubt it. But she's grateful for what came after, I'm sure. You know, she would not have been that person. And there's so many people like that. And their lives are very inspiring for us and give us hope that we too can deal with life as well, you know. So this is one way we can be grateful for things that are difficult in life, you know, and that make us who we are, actually. So unfortunately, we grow from, in Buddhism we say dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, unhappiness or suffering. We grow from those experiences, not so much from when we're comfortable life is going along smoothly and we're coasting. It's when we get these real hiccups, these things that shouldn't be, that we don't want, that then we really grow into quite a different person from what we were before, perhaps. But I was going to say, with that meditation on I'm so lucky, this was a point to make with that. When during the day we can use mantras like that. They used to call these things affirmations. But it's not, affirmation always made me feel like you're trying to convince yourself of something. And I think that's not the point. Just to bring up the feeling, I'm so lucky. And so just to realise that each and every one of us is running on mantras during the day. I've met people and I've seen myself too. You know, some of the mantras that we're running on, things like, I can't, you know. And if we have a mantra like that, it's really, you know, disabling. It will disable us, actually. And we're running on these mantras. So choose a mantra that's going to give us, you know, a good quality, bring up happiness. First of all, bring up happiness and bring up a positive quality that can lead to our spiritual development and growth. Let's not, you know, let's realise what programming we're running on. Because this is as Buddhists, actually, the Buddha taught that everything comes from causes and conditions. And he talked about his path of being a path of training. Training is actually causes and conditionings. We're conditioning ourselves in a different way. And this is the whole point of it. Conditioning is like establishing habits. In this case, good habits. We've got many bad habits, negative habits, we can well do without. They don't produce happiness. So this is good habits. All right. So I think now good. Maybe I'll tell another story from this one a bit lighter, so that's good. And that is the two friends met, two old friends met, and one of them looked very glum and looked a bit depressed, and the other one said, "What's the problem?" And his friend said, "Well, 3 weeks ago my uncle died and left me $50,000. And the other friend said, "In that case, you should be happy." And he said, "Well, then 2 weeks ago my cousin died and left me $100,000. And he said, "What's the problem?" And he said, "Well, last week my grandmother died and she left $500,000 to me." And he said, "What's the problem? This is great." He said, "This week there hasn't been anything." That's how we are. It's really amazing, but that's how we are. We're not grateful for the other things in between. So let's... we're getting close to the end because there will be some questions, I think. One of the things that I was going to mention about gratitude is that it cushions us in hard times, and we've just mentioned that. Thank you, Adrian, for that. That was good. Please do check out Janine the Machine. I think they're amazing, really good. But gratitude has so many good benefits that it's difficult to mention them all. As I say, contentment, it reduces our sense of isolation. Because often people, you know, in our society, even though we live in large numbers, in cities and so on, can feel lonely, you know, and separated. But when we have this idea of gratitude, it actually, being thankful, it connects us. And this is a very important aspect of gratitude or thankfulness. It connects us to other people. We're thankful to them. We realise that we have what we have because of them. It may be, you know, just qualities they have. Sometimes you're very thankful, not material things, you know, just for the things they've shared with us, the support they've given us at difficult times, being there for us. They're the things we can be very thankful. And these days, as I say, you know, just having time for another person is pretty amazing, you know, because people's lives are busy. And so this is one of the things it does, builds bridges. And it builds the very important quality we all need is empathy, you know, being able to put ourselves in the place of others, you know. It builds this sense of realising that the things we would like or dislike very likely other people wouldn't like or dislike, things we might do or say. And I always use that as a test for what I'm going to do and say. When I say always, not always, but I try to keep it in mind. Would I like to hear this? Would I like to receive this action that I'm about to do for somebody else? So it's very good to, as I say, put yourself in other people's place, to have that sense of empathy, and gratitude is great. And they often say that it's a sign of real emotional maturity, spiritual maturity too, the more grateful we are, you know, just for the simple things of life, you know, the flowers, the trees, the air we have, the water, all those things which we may not be so grateful for, you know, because we all need, don't we, food, we need, this is what the Buddha was talking about, the four requisites, food, and we need clothing, we need shelter, we need medicines. So we can be very thankful for those things. One of the people I know, she has this lovely, it's more of a contentment exercise, but it's also gratitude. She says when she turns the tap on in the morning and water comes out, she's so grateful. She's so, so grateful. I mean, many people, we turn the tap on every day. We don't think that, do we? We think, you know, far from it. It's not warm enough. It's, you know, whatever. It's got too much chlorine in it or something. So I think... I think maybe there we can finish. There's many things I was going to go on for, you know, about what we can be grateful for, and we've touched on some of those things. So I'd like to finish there because I think there will be some questions from the internet. But first of all, questions... Do we have questions from the floor? Just briefly.
Hello. Yeah. Say, if you really look at human life, there's not a single human being can live without other human beings. If you really understand that, it is pretty obvious that everyone should have gratitude to all humanity.
Thank you for that. That's true. We are all very interconnected. So, and these days, if you live in a city and so on, we're incredibly interconnected. I mean, all the things that we use, for instance, we don't know the farmers that grew the food, that packed the people who packed the food, they sell the food, and so on. The electricity, the water, everything we're getting is coming from so many people, and that's why a society like this really needs to be very peaceful in order to all function. If it doesn't, we don't have peace, then it can all fall apart, and then we can start going to the tap in the morning and think, no water. Or the next day go, there's water, fantastic. It's really good. So it's very important because we all live together, and there's a lot of, you know, I will give another talk about it. The gratitude we can feel for our parents actually is an important one. The place of parents in Buddhism is an important subject because it's one in the West that there's a very different take on parents, which is not the Buddhist take, actually. So it's much kinder, actually. So, yes, thank you for that, Dr. Jaya. And are there any questions from the internet? There are no questions from the internet. Oh, that's all right, that's good. I thought gratitude is something that many speakers... I'm grateful. Thank you. Thank you. They're probably still asleep. Yes, would you like? Is that? Right. Sri Juth. Yes? Yes.
Thank you, Ajahn. Sometimes when you, travel to a third world country, that you're talking about water, you don't have clean water.
Yes.
And, even to have a warm shower, it's not even available to you. So that's when you really can feel gratitude towards what you have back at home. But how do you bring the practice when you're back at home so that you do have the gratitude of that warm shower and that water as it flows out the tap? How do you bring that practice in?
Yes. Well, I hope that exercise that I had of imagining you being separated from people and things would help. So whatever way we can bring up that sense of remembering perhaps what it was like when we were in a place where there wasn't any warm water, whether the water wasn't there all the time or the conditions weren't like what we're used to here in Australia, that can help us to have that gratitude, to realise that maybe most of the world in most of the world, the things we take for granted are not necessarily available all the time. They can be intermittent. So that's the real. That's the way I would encourage that. And also, as I say, you know, just this, I'm so lucky, changing the perspective, trying to get some balance in the mind between the to-do list, which sees everything that we need to get or we think we need to get, and the things that are actually there that we can really appreciate, see the pluses in our lives. So maybe those two things, you know, I'm so lucky, and also just thinking of the times when you haven't had those things to bring up gratitude for them. Most important ones to have thankfulness or gratitude for are the people in our lives, really, the people in our lives, because that really improves our relationship. And also, it's also in accord with reality too, because we, in actual fact, the people in our lives, whoever they are, mother, father, children, friends, whoever they are, work colleagues, they won't be there forever. We act as if they're there forever, but that's not the case. And this is where people can, you know, take others for granted or mistreat them, badly mistreat them, because they're not taking on board the fact that, no, you know, I'm not here forever, they're not here forever. And when we do remember that, we can actually realise this is quite precious, what we have now, and it's passing. It's passing. So, for instance, with children, you know, parents with children, you know, that time when they're young will pass and they become their own persons, as it were, when they grow up. So we just treasure when we're there with them at that age, whatever age we're at. You know, I have, as I grow older, I have this, it increasingly comes to me, the feeling that, you know, you remember the past, but as you grow older, you realise you cannot step back into that past. You know, they have this saying about you can't step into a river, the same river twice. It's the same idea, actually. That you can remember your friends, you remember situations you had, and it was, you know, you really found them very dear, they're very important for you at the time. But you realise, too, you can't step back. The causes and conditions, they've moved on. The stream's moved on. And this is our life. This is samsara, actually. This is the Buddha's concept of being born and reborn over and over again. That time is moving, transience, that impermanence is happening all the time. So that in the bigger picture should make us, you know, appreciate others particularly, you know, because they won't always be there, we won't always be there. So I hope that answered the question a little, Sri Juth, you know. Yeah, thank you. Yes, maybe go for it.
Thank you, Ajahn. My question is there a difference between feeling grateful, feeling happy, mm-hmm. and feeling contented? Because they're pretty much, at least what I feel, it's pretty similar.
They are, actually. They're fairly similar. But, I did think about this, actually, and sort of felt about it, did some feeling about it. Gratitude is more a sense of, has more of a sense of being thankful to others, to situations, whereas contentment, they are very related. Contentment is not so focused towards others, to what life's offered us and so on, just to what we already have. We're not thinking of where it came from. Gratitude is thinking of where it came from and being grateful for that gift, whether it be from parents, family, friends, whoever, or life itself. We're looking at where it came from, you know, so we are acknowledging, gratitude is acknowledging, knowing what has been done, and then having this feeling, this response about what has been done, which is being thankful. Whereas contentment is the feeling that we have enough, everything, you know, it's fine as it is, what I have in my life, even if, you know, there's many things we need, contentment has the sense of, it's enough, I don't need anything. Contentment is a sense of being wealthy, actually, in a way, because, you know, what you have is enough. That feeling. It's the opposite of the want list, you know, the to-do list, to-get list. So they're a little bit different. And what often they'll say, I think Ajahn Brahm said that gratitude will lead to contentment. You know, when you're grateful to people, situations in your life, then it develops this sort of sense of contentment with what you've got. This is enough. you know, rather than, as I say, the to-get list, which is huge, it's unlimited. So there is a slight, you know, a slight difference. But, you know, I notice with all these positive emotions, for me anyway, they have a very similar feeling, you know, warmth, expansiveness, relaxation, kindness, or, you know, in them, you know. So they have very a similar feeling. So, but that's just, in, you know, a way of expressing it anyway. Gratitude, those that have given, have influenced us, given us these things that we're grateful for, thankful for. Contentment, the actual things that we have enough. So I hope that answered it. And of course, the biggest thing to be grateful for is a spiritual teaching that makes head, what do you say, makes sense of our lives. So that's very important. And this is where the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha is ultimately the thing that, for Buddhists at least, you know, gives meaning and purpose to our life, gives framework to understanding what this is about. You know, the life that we experience, it, making sense of it. And this is what all spiritual teachings endeavour to do. And so this is actually very, very valuable. This is the most important gift we have, because without it, we tend to be, as it were, you know, sort of going around in darkness, trying to make sense of things, you know, trying to put it together. What's it all about? That sort of questions, the big questions about life, the meaning of life. So I'd like to finish there, the meaning of life, and those who'd like to... Oh, all right, yes. All right, there's one question online, I think.
Yes, so there's a question online asking, this person would like to know more about Buddhism thoughts on parents, and that was the question.
Oh, all right, Buddhism thoughts on parents. I'll give a talk on that. I plan to give a talk on that, actually, because it's a very important karmic relationship. I'll just say that briefly, that, you know, we're not accidentally born to our parents, you know, our mother and father. There is a connection from the past, we say from past lives, and we have had a desire to be born there. Of course, that brings up questions of, well, you know, when you have parents that are like angels, that's fine, but sometimes some parents are not like that. You know, we hear some astounding reports of people who treat their children badly. But there's nevertheless, there is a strong connection that has brought one into being born with those parents. And in Buddhism, and I know one monk said, and I think it's very true, even if our parents were very cruel and callous, he said, they gave us one gift, the gift of life. And then we can make of it what we wish, you know, we'll make of it as we can. So this is an important gift, no matter whether they were good parents or not, you know. But I'll talk about that on another occasion. And the Buddha was also talking about how we repay our parents. That's part of that talk, actually, how we repay our parents. And I'll just leave you with this stunning image from the Buddha. It's unforgettable. He was very good at these unforgettable images. He said that if we were to carry our parents around on our shoulders, our mum on one side and our dad on one side, and we were massaging them, feeding them, giving them drinks, and they were to urinate and defecate on us while they were sitting on our shoulders, for 100 years, he said, this would not be enough to repay them. Pretty amazing. You try and forget that one. And then he goes on to tell you how you can repay your parents, and that's another talk. But that's amazing, isn't it? You know, he's really making the point that our connection with our parents is really super strong, supercharged relationship. And the idea we often get in the West, you know, where people will say, I've heard people say this, I didn't ask to be born. You know, maybe your kids have said this, I didn't ask to be born. You know, and I think that's, of course, in Buddhism we say, well, that's not true, actually. You were in there. You wanted to. So that's another talk, and thank you for coming today, and I hope that was of interest to you, and I hope that gratitude is not a platitude for you and you make it a vehicle for your happiness and well-being.
Sorry, Ajahn, there's one last question from online.
Yes, just...
Sorry, we'll be quick. So this question asks about, what about gender? Are we born into the proper gender?
Are we born into the proper... We're born into the gender we're attracted to, actually, to a large extent. Yes, yes. No, I do think this is another in-depth sort of question. I have thought about it. So there, yes, I think we're reborn according to our our gender, according to or karma in a large extent, in the sense that most often, well, not always, people want to be the same sex as they were in the past life, but that's not always the case. Because, and you know, in many societies, and you can see it, this is this is my idea particularly, that, you know, for instance, in many women, for instance, in societies may feel disempowered. They feel like women are not getting an equal deal, and that's true in most of history, and that they prefer to be reborn as a man. Because then, you know, because often women think, men have got it easy. So if you die with that thought, you may take a masculine body, so that could change your gender, as it were. I don't know the other way. Men have got more of an attachment to being men, actually. And if you say, I remember saying this to somebody, I thought, saying, you know, our gender can change when we take rebirth. And he was more or less saying, well, a man can't, you know, it's not possible. And I said, well, you know, it is possible, but if we are very attached to being, say, a man, and many men will be, you know, identified with that because it's a comfortable, something they're comfortable with, they're used to, and also it gives them a lot of benefits that they wouldn't have if they were born as a woman, say, for instance. So then they continue as a man. So, and then there's, then you can get, with the gender, changing gender, you can get all issues of homosexuality and so on coming up. And I think it makes sense to me in that context, you know, that people are born with their sexuality coming from their past life. You know, that's where I think the seeds are, from coming from the past life. So we can change gender, yes. And it just depends on what we're more attached to, being a male, being a female, whatever. So I'd like to thank you with that. That's a bit of a potboiler, isn't it? So we can finish there, and just, if you'd like, pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha.